This is Tracy Malone from NarcissistAbuseSupport.com. I am here today with a good friend of mine, John McKinney, and we are going to talk about parental alienation from the male perspective. I've had many people on here, many experts we've talked about parental alienation, but John hasn't spoken to three of his four kids in a very long time, and it does happen to men too. So this is going to be a great conversation. We're going to talk about, you know, what it looks like, how it felt, and what are some mistakes that you want to avoid. So if you are experiencing what you think is parental alienation, even if you're a female, this is going to help you. So stay tuned and let's go welcome John, because he's a wealth of information. And I'm sorry that he had to learn this wealth of information by this kind of experience and losing your children. It's a heart-wrenching experience, and so many of my friends have lost their children as well, and I don't wish this on anyone. So if you are struggling with this, let's go meet John, and we'll see how you can make it through the other side. Hi, John. It is so exciting to see you again.
Hi, my friend. How are you? Good to see you, Tracy. It's good to be with you again today.
You know, we are going to talk about a very, very dear to you topic, and dear to a lot of people, but I'm so excited. We're talking about parental alienation.
Oh, yeah.
This is what happened to you. And
it is. It was been quite a ride with that. Still in it.
So do you want to tell any part about your story in today's thing?
Sure. I'd be happy to do that. We'll start with, I was married for 27 years. Mm-hmm. I have four children. Their names are Eeny, Meeny, Miney, and I always said ain't no mo. So that was four's enough, one for each hand between us. And I am actually currently estranged from three of my kids right now as a result of being married to a covert narcissist. So that's the long and the short of it.
It is a horrible journey. I have so many friends and clients that have been through this. I do have one friend that I worked with at the Coalition for Domestic Violence who hadn't seen four of her kids in so many years. And her oldest one came back to her years ago. And we did a video together with the daughter. Oh. The daughter started coming to the domestic violence center with us. And she got to know me. She's like, I think I want to tell the world about this. And it was very exciting. The daughter came and she was in her 20s. She's now happily married and things are moving along. But because of that interview that we did so long ago, we're talking like 6 years ago, Red Table found the interview. And her mom were flown somewhere recently to be on a Red Table show about parental alienation. So really, she wants to become a spokesperson to help understand what the journey was for the kids in that home. So let's start by explaining, what is parental alienation?
So parental alienation begins when, as a relationship between a husband and a wife or whoever it might be, kind of unfolds, and essentially one parent does everything they can to keep the other parent away from the children, whether it's relationally estranged or sometimes even physically removed from the children completely, and causes excruciating pain for the parent who is not able to see their own kid. I know for me, it's just horrific. I hate it that I'm not in relationship with my own children. It's bad enough that I found myself married to a narcissist and had to go through ending all of that. But I didn't plan on ending my relationship with my children. And I personally kind of discovered too late what was going on with respect to parental alienation. So it wound up being a pretty significant surprise to me.
Yeah. And again, who does that? So why would we even imagine they would turn your children against you? I mean, that is like, the heartache in losing a child. It's like they're dead, but they're alive and you just don't get to see them.
Yep. And it's really painful. I mean, to invested so much of your life, and to not have that relationship is just excruciatingly painful. Yeah. The good news, I hope let's lead with this. A lot of times the kids do finally figure it out, and I'm hopeful for my own, and I even see some progress with my youngest. I'm beginning to figure out some of the details of what's gone on and the dynamics of the relationship, and particularly with my ex. But it takes far longer than most of us would like to like it to, for sure.
And it starts a long time ago. Like, that's what we have to make people understand, that it is not just because you're going through a divorce that all of a sudden they're going to try to rip your kids away.
That's really true. You know, if the divorcing moment for me was the surprise moment, and what it lent me the definition for the years prior. And it all came down to this. When I told my ex that I wanted to divorce, one of her responses to me was, "I just want you to know that some of the kids will never speak to you again." And in that moment, everything inside me went, and I go, "Oh my God, she's been talking to them about this." And I wanted to be a good parent. I hope I was a good parent. And I didn't have conversations with my ex or about my ex with my children. That was none of their business. And quite honestly, still is none of their business. Mm-hmm. And there's no way for them to understand completely because they weren't involved in all of the conversations. So whatever one parent gives another about the other parent winds up being spin or secondhand. And what I found in that moment was that my ex, what I discovered was that she'd been having conversations with my children about me for probably years. And I can even go back further when the kids were very little and I wanted to go help and she just wouldn't let me. Like, she had to be in control of the children. She had to have the primary relationship with the kids. And I can remember even as a young dad going, "I don't understand here. I feel like I'm in a power struggle with you for our own children. And I really shouldn't feel that way." And looking back, when you see the path of a narcissist over so many years, that's the beginning of parental alienation. You hook them when they're really young. And then as they start to understand what's going on or have some ability, you begin to disrespect the victim to the children and paint them out as a bad parent.
Mm-hmm.
And that lends definition the entire way, so that when it culminates with the divorce. So when the divorce comes along, my kids were primarily or almost adults at that time. Well, they go, "Oh, Dad's just an idiot anyways." Why? Because they've had 20 plus years of this. It really is the frog in the kettle. They don't realize what's taken place, especially with covert narcissists who tend to be kind of more under the rug and fly under the radar. It's a situation where they're actually doing this to the children. The children have absolutely no idea that
it's grooming. It's so slow and steady that it happens with, "No, I'll get that. I'll take them to soccer. No, you know, I got it," right? And again, that control.
Absolutely correct.
But it also, when they're there, "Well, your dad never really did this for you. I'm the only one." And then they drop those needs for years before the actual, you're never seeing your kids again.
They seem, at least covert, seem very, very martyr-like in this whole thing. You know, they're self-sacrificing, they're giving of themselves. And quite honestly, the things that they're giving are probably things the kids need to go do for themselves. It really, at least in my situation, I found it more enabling entitlement than I did anything else. You know, it'd be like giving a kid, you know, candy for dinner, and mom's going, "Here, have this candy." And dad goes, "No, we don't eat candy for dinner." And mom goes, "See, dad's a bad parent. He's just mean. He's not going to give you what he wants." Mm-hmm. And those kinds of situations, you know, when you're giving a kid the things they want that are not necessarily good for them, in either for their independence or for their health or whatever it might be, and you step in with healthy parental discipline, and this other parent just devalues it, and they just don't care about you, they don't love you, they don't understand, they're not going to give of themselves the way I would give. I have a good example, one of those stories. My son was probably 21 or 22 years old, and I was, this is prior to the separation or the divorce, and my ex got up at like 4:30 in the morning, and I happened to stir when she got up, and I'm like, "Why are you getting up so early?" She says, "Well, you know, our son needs to he needs to go and get his oil changed on his car. And I said, well, he can do that himself. And all he has to do is drive the thing up to Jiffy Lube or the place up the street and hand them $20 and they will do it. And if $20 is a problem, I'm happy to go do it. And she said, oh no, he can't do that by himself. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna go over and I'm gonna drop him off at the car place. We're gonna drive his car there. Then I'm gonna bring him to work. Then I'm gonna go to work and we go early. So then I can leave early and I can go pick him up because he only works part-time and I'll pick him up. And then I'm gonna take him over there and then he can come home. And I said, look, he's got a part-time job. You have a full-time job. But he's 20 years old. This is something that he can do by himself. Oh no, I have to go do it. And she did. Now here's the really ridiculous thing. The place where the oil change was right across the street from where he worked. So he could have, you know, gone, you can't make this shit up. So he could have gone to the place, dropped his car off, walked across the street to work, walked back across the street, picked it up, and driven the thing home. But she had to be involved in it. She had to be the parent who's sacrificing for him. And then if I say, go do it yourself, which at 20 years old, guess what? I'm trying to build an independent child and not a dependent one. He should be doing those kinds of things. He should know how to go maintain a car. He should know how to hand somebody $20 and ask for services for something like this, because he's going to go need these skills. But the narcissist would get involved and interrupt those things, put it all on themselves. And they look like the suffering servant to the child. And then the parent who's given healthy boundaries looks like an absolute idiot.
Yeah, that's exactly the scenario of how they use it. They're parentifying the situation and having to be in their life when they don't need them, right? They're inserting themselves in as the best friend. And I'm the good parent because your dad says you should do it yourself. Well, again, that's our job at 20 years old, you know, 16, maybe I'd help him. First time, here's how you do it, right? But when you get older, if you don't learn those skills, you're going to be dependent on mom. And that's exactly what she wants.
Yeah, I've often thought that a narcissistic parent in who's doing these kinds of things is really more like a sorority sister or an older brother or sister, but they're not a parent. They want to be liked. Mm-hmm. And in a balance between I'm liked and I'm a parent, I'm liked wins every time, because they're trying to get the kids around them in almost this little tribe. You know, I think they feel like there's safety in numbers, and they don't feel safe anyways because they don't trust anybody anyhow. So they get the kids around them doing this, and then you've got this cluster. And ultimately, what I discovered, I could never figure out why I felt alone in my own family. Like it was always kind of them and me. And if there was information to be had, it would always come to me last. There was triangulation going on. You'll see that a lot in a parent who alienates. Instead of the kids communicating with you directly, the narcissist parent will set up a situation where they give their distrust of you, the victim, to their children. So instead of the children coming to you directly, the children communicate with the narcissist communicates back to you, and then you communicate back through the narcissist to the children, and ultimately you're missing this relationship with your own kids. And I was too dumb to figure that stuff out, that it was all going on. But when she said to me, some of your kids will never speak to you again, it's like, oh my God, now I understand. I understand what's happening here. Then in the further conversations, I wanted to talk to my children and give them at least a bird's eye view of why I was divorcing. And they don't, again, they're not entitled to the details. The details are not important to the children, I think, and shouldn't be spoken to them because it's not their battle. And I didn't ever want my kids to feel like they were a part of that situation. But when I spoke to them about these things, each one of them that I spoke to told me things that they would never have known unless either myself or my ex had spoken them. They were defining, and they were private conversations that had happened between me and my ex-wife, and and they shouldn't have been privy to them. And they, of course, when they were told the situation, were told with her spin, which was deceiving anyways. I mean, narcissists are pathological liars, but they would never have known about these conversations unless my ex had spoken to them. So they break these boundaries, these healthy boundaries of parent versus kid, and they kind of come into their lives like a child and give and give, and they look entitled, and the kids are enabled with their entitlement, and the narcissist parent looks like they're just so sacrificing. Oh, what the things I do for my children. Wow. That's exactly it. And my kids, if you ask them, particularly the three that don't communicate, they would go, "Mom has done everything for us." And that's how they feel. She's done it quite successfully. So for me, I learned that the parental alienation started at birth with my children. It really did go back that far, I think, in not letting me help, in gift giving and little things, so that by the time you kind of figure it all out, you're in more deep doo-doo than you really understand. And then it's kind of, there's no single conversation I can have to go undo all of that. I can't undo a life's worth of the frog in the kettle in one moment. There's no way to go do that. There's no way to undo it. And it's something they have to learn, unfortunately, and that takes time.
Do you think they saw what was going on to any degree, or it was just so normalized to them that mom was the boss and dad was over here?
I think the disrespect, and if towards me it was constant, I think underneath, behind the scenes, it's constant disrespect. Mm-hmm. I don't think they see that. I think, and some of it depends upon the child too. I have one kid who is like uber close to her and just like her and treats life like her, and it's almost boyfriend, girlfriend, like, you know, it's too close.
Creepy. Yeah.
And it's the relationship is just not healthy. Mm-hmm. And that particular child is, I don't see them picking up anything quickly. I have two other children. One, my youngest, ironically, who I think is on the verge of having all this stuff figured out. And perhaps my oldest as well sees problems. I don't know that they understand how it affected me, mm-hmm. and how it affected our relationship. I think they're seeing how it affects them, but they've not yet put the pieces together. And as a parent, I have to be really careful about what I say. I don't ever want to speak negatively of my ex. I don't tell them or talk to them about the situation or the divorce. And I've told them that. And some of these things I'm happy to converse through as they figure it out. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to wait for those moments where they bring it up. They have these conversations with you versus me saying, okay, this is what happened. Because then it's tune out, talk to hand. They're just not interested because they're on team mom.
Yeah, they're poisoned. They don't have no other opinion other than, you know, the cult-like.
That is, the cult, that's actually a really good word to use. It really is kind of very cultish, you know. The narcissist, and you know, again, my situation is with a wife. It could be reversed. These roles can be switched in the family, but the narcissist winds up being the cult leader, and the children the unwitting followers in this whole thing.
Absolutely, like most cult victims are, right? So did you have to handle this through court? How does the court handle PAS?
So I don't personally have an awful lot of experience with the court proceedings on these kinds of things. I do know that narcissists often lie, and I've spoken with a lot of people who have had to go through these situations. I know some who the parent has gotten the kids involved and leveled accusations at the father that they've had to go legally defend. And I think a lot of it has to do with how the courts handle this is how much deception the judge actually believes from the narcissist. And it can go either way. Again, it could be husband or wife, but it's is the stuff believable? And if they manage to get the lies believed by the judge, it can go awfully, and the court proceedings can be horrible. I was in a situation where I wanted to be present for my children all through their growing up period. So I kind of waited till my kids were graduated from high school and then divorced. So I wouldn't have to, one, put them through this, and two, didn't have to deal with the same kind of financial situations that are also incurred from child support and things like that. So those things were important to me. So I didn't personally have to go through the court system on those kinds of things.
Well, that's good, because I know it's a battle, because as you said, narcissism, their narrative is they're the victim, and they start that way before, because again, everybody that I worked with my husband, yeah, he turned them against me, right?
They Absolutely. Been
on it for a long time, and then the day, poof, see what happens, right? So it is a culmination of the lies just coming in, and the court believes them. I'm doing a presentation for a law firm next week on gaslighting and divorce.
Oh yeah.
That's exactly, they lie to the judge, they lie to their lawyer, they lie to the GAL, they lie to everybody and try to rewrite history as to what the truth was in the family, just so that they win. And so their power and control is evident in everybody that gets involved into a court case, so that if you're coming out and going, these are the facts, this is what happened, you end up looking like the crazy one, because they're the one. It's the victim, and they
especially if you're passionate about it, right? If you bring any emotion to the table, you have any passion, you have any, you may be rage filled over this deception, you wind up looking like the insane one in the relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think to the degree these lies are believed by the legal system, to the it's the degree that you wind up losing and being financially just strapped over these kinds of things. Yeah. I know of men who have had child services chased after them because of some of the deception, mm-hmm, that the narcissist is saying about the kids. And then he's in a situation where now he's got child protective services looking over him, and they don't want to give him any time with his own children. So it can range from mild to wild with respect to the court system, as best as I understand. Some tend to be more agreeable, but others are just horrific. I mean, I know people millions of dollars in debt over these kinds of things.
Oh, absolutely. And again, I have had clients go into appellate court for a freaking divorce with a narcissist. Yeah. I'm like, that is like ridiculous. Like the judge said, you pay her this. No, I'm going to appeal that. What? I mean, we're in a different place in history here. So the courts are really not that familiar. And there are experts out there that are really helpful for people to learn more about this. There's a Dr. Jennifer Harmon. She's a professor up here in Colorado, and I got to have lunch with her once and really learn about her work, because they are doing the work to really debug this and create the professional papers that will educate a judge, will educate a lawyer, right? It's something that needs to be done on a grander scale, because judges are unaware of it, and they take sides based on who's nice and who they like that day, right? Yeah. So it's the children who are suffering with all of this. Yeah. So what can someone, before we say, what can someone
do? One other thought too, you know, the one of the worst things is if you've got kids that are old enough, the kids will speak badly of you. Yeah. Because they've been smear campaigned all along. There is an age in different states, and the age is different, sometimes 14, sometimes 15 years old, where the courts will take into consideration what the kids think. And if the kid's been smear campaigned from birth, mm-hmm, till this very time of divorce, the kids will tell the fake narrative as well.
Oh yeah. Because again, that's all they've been grooming, right? Yep. That's what it is. So let's ask two questions I have left are, what are the biggest mistakes that parents make?
For me, the biggest mistake I think that parents make in this whole process is bad mouthing the other spouse. Mm-hmm. So if you happen to seek help for narcissistic abuse, or talk to people in psychological arenas or whatever it might be, there's only one piece of advice that I got throughout all of it that was consistent the whole way. And it was, the parent who does not badmouth the other parent wins in the long run.
Okay.
And it's very easy, you know, a narcissist has basically weaponized your children. Mm-hmm. They've created a situation where they're taking your kids away from you, and in order to hurt you in mm-hmm. some capacity. And so the kids have become a weapon, and then it's very easy to kind of want to put them in the center of, you know, there are lots of details that go on with a divorce and lots of moving parts and holidays and all of that. You want to be careful you don't badmouth and you don't use the kids as weapons for against the other spouse.
Mm-hmm.
I've made it my business to when I speak of my ex, I don't ever speak of her negatively, ever. I don't, and when I do speak of her, it's only in a positive light and in a historical context. So, you know, when you were little, your mom and I used to, and fill in the blank, or do you remember when we went here and your mom and I used to, or we did this together, what a beautiful day that was. And I'm trying to invoke positivity and trying to help them remember the good things that, you know, as they might have transpired. But I personally will never speak negatively of my ex. And I also don't talk about the divorce or the separation or any of the narcissistic stuff. I have a pseudonym and I have a pen name because I don't want my family involved in this or my children or whatever it might be. That's intentional as well. Mm-hmm. So these are the kinds of things I personally do to guard how I'm presented to my children, in the hopes that one day that's really true, that the parent who's on the up and up and doesn't speak negatively of the other parent, either covertly or overtly, I don't want to do that passive aggressively either. That's how I'm going to live my life. I want to speak positively, and I also don't put my kids in a situation where I'm passing information back and forth. I'm not trying to get information about the other children from one kid. I don't want any of my children to feel like they're the intermediary for anything and a pawn getting passed back and forth in what is an awkward situation. What's taken place between me and my ex is between her and I alone. Mm-hmm. My kids don't need to be involved in that. And I will, to my dying breath, do everything I can to keep them away from that kind of stuff. So for me, the bad mouthing and using kids as a pawn in some kind of way, or involving them in things that they shouldn't be involved in, I think is the biggest mistake I've seen parents make on the whole. You have any others to add to that?
I think something that I help people with, which is how you talk to the kids.
Yeah.
When you do get them, right? It's really tapping into their feelings and creating memories when you're with them, right? So it's you know, you put everything at the door when they walk in, and yeah. You are like, gosh, that must have been so hard to hear. You know, if they say something like, mommy said that you're so mean and you're doing this, you know, honey, instead of answering it in the way that we would normally go, well, that didn't happen, and you don't know what, that's not true or whatever, but just to tap into not the what they said, because that's puppeting, but tap into like, that must have really hurt to hear that, honey, you know, tell me about how you feel. Yeah. And going into their feelings so that someone in their life is validating who they are.
Yes.
Like, they're not getting any of that on the narc side. They are correct. Getting control. They are getting fall in line, little soldiers. And when mm-hmm. it comes to their emotions, they need somebody to be that place.
You need,
so
you
when you
safety.
Have that tool. Yeah, safety.
Oh, they need that safety. Yeah, absolutely.
So just knowing how to talk differently is a really big important part, and that I think helps people and avoid acting emotional. You know, yeah. A lot of parents, if they haven't seen their kids in a while, will be like, oh, I so miss you guys. not good, right? It's putting a wedge that's even bigger, because now they'll feel guilt, and we don't want them to feel guilt to have to come see you, right? So learning to, you know, put that stuff out there when the kids are there. Again, they come in, you drop everything, and you are full present and there.
Yeah.
Allowing
down.
My ex, not my ex-husband, but the next jerk, was totally alienating and ended up separating. He got the son and she got the daughter until they took the kid away from him too. But like, he would sit there and tell the kids how bad their mom was. And then he did it with me as well. He was a crier. And I thought it was so sensitive and, oh, how sweet. But it was guilt provoking. It was intentional. It was his kid tried to kill himself by drinking bleach. Like, he was screwing up this kid so bad by this guilt and, your daddy misses you, don't go, kids. And then I was babysitting for that son. And we were walking one night, and it was a beautiful night, and we're walking along, and the father wasn't there. I was there alone with him. And I said, do you miss your mom and your sister? I do, but daddy's always crying. He needs somebody. So he gave up his mom and his sister to be with that. Thankfully, after the suicide attempts, he did get taken away. But like, it was that sort of level of a kid at 12 years old should not feel responsible for daddy's happiness.
Yeah.
And daddy not crying and being responsible to pull himself away from his mother and his sister.
Yeah.
To just make sure daddy's okay, because he's always crying. It was so pathetic. But at the time I was like, oh, how sensitive. He loves his children so much. And then I realized what it was. And he had been doing it to me as well. So, you know, it's being there for your kids, and really for the ones that don't have their kids in their life. And I have so many friends and clients that have had this happen. It's self-care. You know, don't let yourself go down, but I'm not getting out of bed routine, because you've got to be strong when they come back, and
you've
got to start living your life. As hard as it is, I think it's important for people to know that you moving on, and not moving on like, I don't want to see my kids anymore, but you creating a life, you having friends, you starting, because you're not going to be a whole you if you can't do the self-care stuff.
No question. And you know, one of the other things that triggered a thought that you were talking about here, you know, you're always a parent.
Mm-hmm.
As kids get older, you know, you can be a bit more of a friend, but you're always a parent.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're used to is not a parent. Mm-hmm. What their idea of parenting is the genie in the bottle, you know, it's just somebody who constantly is blinking things into existence.
Oh, I Dream of Jeannie, wasn't it?
That's right.
You did that.
We're talking about 60s TV, right? You know, so walking that line well and being a parent first and then a friend second is also something that I think is immeasurably important when you're dealing with your children. Afterwards, you don't want to become a friend. You don't want to become the friend. You want to be the person who has healthy boundaries, who is guiding them into independence and rightness and truthfulness and honesty. You want to be the person who is not just going to tell them what they want to hear, or not just give them that piece of candy when they need to be eating broccoli or something else. You want to be that parent who is a good parent. And again, I think in the long run, kids see that as well.
And you just, when you just said, give them the piece of candy, I went, oh, wrote it down, because that's another big mistake is gift giving. Compensating with gifts is not the answer. Compensating with love and memories when you're with them is really what the kids need. The gifts don't fill that happy hole that they need to feel loved. And again, making them feel safe in the house is so important. So the candy, the gifts, I'll take you to the Olympics and we'll sit in the front row, you know, that's buying the children. And, you know, it's not necessarily the best thing for them or for your relationship.
Yeah, without question.
Is there anything else that we missed?
Not that I can think of. I think we really did kind of cover it all. That's all right. It was good. You know, I would just tell you to be hopeful, I'll tell you what I'm waiting for. So some people know in a former life, I was actually a pastor, and there's this story in the Bible that has spoken to me, and it's about parental alienation. I think there's this father who has two sons, and the one son says, "Give me my inheritance. See ya, I'm gone." And the father, for whatever reason, kind of gives him the cash, which he wouldn't normally do until he's dead, because that's what an inheritance is. And the kid goes off and squanders the cash and has sex with everybody he wants to have sex with and parties and all this. And then one day, the cash is gone. And as the story says, you know, the boy is out there feeding pigs and he's hungry. And it says, and then he came to his senses, and he winds up from that moment, from that moment of coming to their senses, to his senses, he goes back to dad. And he goes, you know, I could actually work for dad, and dad would treat me better than I'm being treated right now. So I'm going to go back and just say, can I work for you? And as the story goes on, it says the father was kind of standing at the end of the driveway, waiting for him to come back, and waiting with open arms. And what's fascinating to me about the whole thing is the dad doesn't necessarily chase him. Mm-hmm. He winds up kind of letting him go and do his thing. And he waits for this moment where the kid comes back to his senses so he can hear what's really taking place and can hear the truth. That's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for that moment where my kids kind of come to their senses, and we can have the conversation we need to have. The tendency is to want to go have it up front and explain yourself and validate and say, this is what happened. You really need to know. But when kids have been smear campaigned their whole lives and they've lived parental alienation with you, they are not listening to you. Mm-hmm. And like I said earlier, there's no one conversation or two conversations or three conversations that I can personally have that will undo that 20 years. They just don't measure up. So what you need to do is be a good parent to your kids, love them well, and then wait for them to come back and wait for that moment where they come to their senses, and they will. That's what I'm holding out hope for. I'm seeing evidence of that even in my youngest right now. I'm hopeful for the others, and I pray for them constantly that would take place, but be ready and waiting with open arms for when they return. That's the goal. Be ready and waiting.
Beautiful, beautiful thing. And I thought of the two friends that their kids did come back. Okay, only one of three, but like yours, just one, the older in her cases. But you know what? We hope, we wait, because if we don't, we lose faith, we lose purpose, we lose everything. So it's a hard journey for people who are going through this. They don't see a way out, and they don't know that it will ever end or anyone will ever come back. And, you know, it's a very, very long and painful journey. And I've had, again, I can't even tell you how many friends, and we've sat and talked and had a glass of wine, and it is just heartbreaking. Yeah. But you got to start living again, and then they'll come back and you'll be whole. Because if you just go crumble and then they come back, you're just a crumble mess. You have to get stronger and be the guy at the end of the driveway.
Absolutely. And, you know, it really is difficult. You know, those of you who are involved in a situation with a narcissist, you go, you know, as you're dealing with them, you go, well, this can't get any worse. And then you get out and you find your kids alienated from you. And in some respects, it's hard enough to have to go do this with another adult, but then with your kids, especially if they're younger and you want to be invested in their lives, you go, these narcissists, it just doesn't stop. And there's room for despair there for sure. But be encouraged. They do figure it out. It's even possible for, to have kids in the family who some have figured it out and some haven't. Yeah. All in the same family. Yep. Yeah, so it can happen. Be the good parent you are, and continue to love them well, and they will return.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Thank you, John. This has been
my friend.
Interview. I'm so glad that you are here. Great. Is there something that you want to tell everyone about how to contact you?
You can contact me through my website, malevictimsoffemalenarcissist.com, Or I'm also Male Victims of Female Narcissists on Instagram, and starting some coaching groups for men. So if you're interested in that, we'd love to have you be a part of that too, so we can collectively heal. And it'd be specifically men focused. There are not a ton of resources out there specifically directed at men by men. And Tracy, thank you for your help with this and encouraging me to go to this as well. I really do appreciate you in this, but this is where I'm kind of headed. And if you need help with that, I'd be happy to have a conversation.
Well, you are the person to do this. And I've been long after you going,
you have.
You agree with these men, dude.
You have.
And now it's all coming true, and you're going to change lives because
it's
a different scenario when a male can relate to someone that has been through it. So
absolutely,
all your work.
My pleasure. And any of the women come your way, so
we'll throw you back to the fish.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you,
my friend. I appreciate it.
I hope that was good for you. I love talking to him. We talked for like a half an hour before we started. We could have talked all day. And so I hope that this was beneficial to you. He's a wealth of information. And guys, if you are looking for a men's support group, I've been talking to him for years about this and he just started it. So reach out to him, malevictimsoffemalenarcissist.com. And he's a great wealth of resources for all things narcissist, and follow him on Instagram too. I do. And he's got some great content. So this is Tracy Malone from Narcissist Abuse Support. I am a coach and I coach people. There's my map all over the world. So if you are struggling with a narcissist in your life, please reach out to me and go to my website, narcissistabusesupport.com. You can't forget that. So I'll see you guys all later. Thank you.